Welcome to the B-side. It is Tyler here, and beside me, as always, Pastor Steve. Say hello, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
I knew you were going to do that. I knew it.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, is that
tomorrow?
Today or tomorrow? Tomorrow, yeah. It's Monday, for those of you if you're listening on Friday or something and wondering why we're talking in the past. Or
St.
The
Patrick. Wasn't a saint.
Right.
Wasn't Irish.
Right. Didn't kill any snakes.
Didn't kill a snake.
Yeah, that we know of, anyway.
But he was a missionary to Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, well.
Well, I saw you watching.
I showed, yeah.
I cut it with a foot.
So he was, he was English, got captured by Irish pirates, taken to Ireland. Ireland was wild. The Christianity wasn't there. You know, kidnapped. And while he was kidnapped, he was a slave, his heart was transformed by God and became a Christian. Just he remembering this from the stories and the gospel influence in his life as a child. Now, I think he was a teenager when he was enslaved. He managed to escape and gets back to England. And while home in England, feels this call to go back as a missionary. So he ends up going back years later as a missionary to Ireland and saw massive fruit. And one of the first convert, I think this is true, the first convert in Ireland was his former master.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So he was just, this is in the, around the year 400. An amazing missionary, and now we drink green beer and pinch people and that type of thing.
Yeah.
Not relevant.
You know what's funny? I remember I remember doing that to my wife early on in our marriage. Like, she wasn't wearing green, and I pinched her. And she was like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, St. Patrick's Day. If you're not wearing green, you get pinched. And she, like, she was clear that I've never heard of that. That's false. And I, again, just blame it on the Ontario education system.
Yeah.
You know, among many things. I mean, you can relate.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it's... Well, because legend is that he was a... They
sent
killed
all the,
snakes
no,
or something?
No, he, like, cursed the snake or sent them out of Ireland. All the snakes left Ireland because Patrick told him to leave.
Right. All I can think of
but
is
apparently
that
there's
Simpsons
never
episode.
Been snakes in Ireland.
Yeah, and all I can think of is that Simpsons episode where they all kill snakes, but I don't know enough about it to, like, recollect.
I don't remember
years back, like high school. Anyway, well, enjoy a green pint of Guinness if you must.
Ugh.
Yeah, just a little food coloring. I don't know how you could make dark beer.
Isn't the Chicago? What's the river in Chicago? Is it the Chicago River? What's the,
the Ohio River?
They don't they make it green?
Chicago. Yeah, I think that's what it is. Yeah, yeah. It's I don't know how they do that. It can't be. Good.
Do they still do that? That seems like the type of thing you would stop doing these days. But like the things that they would do when we were kids, and now it's like,
well, now
dumping 100 gallons of green dye into the river somehow hurts the environment. And I wonder if they still do it.
It's silly, but oh, it's the Kentucky River. Oh no, I don't know. Anyway,
happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's. So, if you missed Sunday, which I don't know that you did, unless you're away on spring break or something, there was a good turnout on Sunday. I thought one of my probably my favorite message in the series that we've done. I thought it was one of the kind of most hope filled, tangible. I mean, they'd been the last couple of weeks, but it was neat to see that. I just thought the church responded well to it. Just this idea of hope. Like, I think that's what I kind of left with, this sense of that we're dealing with a God who deals in the miraculous, who deals in the, like, adding breath to death, so to speak, and, like, bringing to life new things that only by the grace of God can be done. And I found it really encouraging. And for me personally, it just reminded me of, like, there's people in my life I've probably given up hope on, realistically. And it was just this call for my wife and I both going home and saying, like, we need to remind ourselves, we need to be praying and putting these people before God, because, like, they may have decided, I used air quotes there, just so you're not watching but you're listening, if we made it a video podcast, we'd get a lot less listeners and watchers, but you get to see my talking. But people who have decided on their faith are often
Yeah. In our community group, we were listing all the impossible situations that we need to keep praying for. Like,
right.
So it was you know, friends, relatives who rejected Christ. There's situations that needed reconciliation. There's some pretty tough situations where you would say, apart from God, can't happen. Can't happen. Yeah. I love how it's, we were talking about this in our group too. Son of man, can these bones live? And I answered, oh Lord God, you know. Like he can't say, it's like everything within him wants to say, no, can't happen.
Yeah.
And yet he can't say yes. Because every, you know, it's, there's no realistic reason. Yeah. And we look around at our situations and go, can I save that person? And we go, I don't want to say no. And yet everything doesn't let me say yes either. So it's like, God, I don't know. You know. And even, we were kind of thinking about even, it's almost like, you know, God doesn't have to ask Ezekiel what his thoughts are on this, but it's almost like you're out with your kid and you're like, it's like, hey, check this out. You're doing something, you're building something, you're working on something, and they haven't experienced this before, and you want them to like, hey, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen when this happens?
Hey, what's going to happen when I put the Mentos in the Diet Coke?
Yeah. Watch this.
Yeah.
And Ezekiel, the kid, is sort of like, I don't know.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? I can't believe what you're saying, but who knows? And then it's God's like helping him along, trying to teach him and show him, check this out. This is going
to
be cool.
And specifically with Ezekiel, you have to think after this long, I don't have any idea how long it's been since.
Like 7-8 years?
Yes. It's been a good season of like God doing super strange stuff, asking him to do super strange stuff, showing up in pretty miraculous and significant ways, and taking drastic measures and doing all these things, that I would imagine that would leave him with a bit of a, like, uneasiness to, like, okay, I can't rule it out, but I also can't jump on board here because I haven't seen it. Yeah. But you do strange stuff sometimes. And,
yeah. I think there's actually a lot of progress when you think back to chapter 2, when he's fuming in his call. Like, he seems to be really angry that God has called him. And now he's at this place where they almost have this relationship where he's unwilling to say no to God. He's unwilling to, like, he's grown a lot.
Hmm.
And I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into the very few words, but it seems like Ezekiel was rather reticent. Like, he was pretty hesitant about being a prophet and doing this at all, bitter, angry, and now he's playing along and he's enjoying the ride and he's sort of like going along with it. And
I thought it was an excellent reminder in a lot of ways that that God does big things, and for me it was like a refreshing reminder to go, like, you know what, in my experience, even in adulthood, when you hear of someone coming to faith in Jesus or professing faith in Jesus, the people that seem the closest are often furthest away, and the people that seem the furthest away are, I often have seen, have the greatest example of, like, God's grace just changing their heart. Like the people that seem self-righteous and close and respecting the community and moral are the hardest to kind of often get over that hump of surrender, and it's the people who are living in the filth and the muck and often crime and addiction and those kind of things that are, seem to be the ones that God loves to show his kind of saving power through, I've seen. Anyway, we had a question from last week's text, I believe. And essentially it was this, in verses 31 and 32 of chapter 36 of Ezekiel, when the exiles have been restored, God says that they will remember their evil ways, and then they will loathe themselves. But then, you know, when we contrast that with ideas of, like, freedom from guilt, freedom from shame, that we often articulate in Christian faith. So the question essentially is, what role does shame play, or loathing ourselves play in the experience? Like, is this just specific to maybe this group of people, or is there something to pull from it for you and I?
Yeah, and it almost seems like a contrast, because in other passages, parts of this passage, they say, like in the very verse before, verse 30, you may never again suffer the disgrace of famine among the nations. So there's this public shame that God promises they won't face again. Public shame, the nations won't hold them in disregard again. And verse 15, they won't hear the reproach of the nations and no longer be the disgrace of the people. But then in verse 31, you will remember your evil ways and your deeds that were not good, and you will loathe yourself for your iniquities and your abominations. Then he says, be ashamed and confounded for your ways. I think this is a healthy thing, that they are having been cleansed. Like there's a progress here. Having been cleansed in verse 25, having been given a new heart and a new spirit that is now no longer the heart of stone that's rejecting God, but is a heart of flesh that is sensitive to God's ways. And with the Spirit of God within them, making it so that they obey Him, giving the power to obey. With the restored, renewed covenant, you shall be my people and I will be your God, verse 28. Delivered from all uncleannesses, in verse 29. No longer under disgrace, verse 30. Then you will remember your evil ways and be ashamed. So I think there's a healthy kind of shame that leads not to guilt, leads not to condemnation, leads not to a like depression or something like negative, but is actually the shame of remembering how you used to be and how God has saved you from it. So it's a past tense thing that is... So it's a shame that leads to, that flows out of God's grace and leads to a worship of God in celebration of His grace.
Right.
As opposed to, there's a kind of shame that would be beating yourself up, condemning yourself for sins that God does not condemn you for. Right? So I have seen that in people where they have committed a sin, they've repented of it many times, sought forgiveness. They're believers. I believe that they've experienced the forgiveness of God. He is not holding against them. He does not remember their sins no more, in that sense. And yet they continue to pile it on themselves.
Right.
And that is not the kind of shame that is healthy or that I think is being talked about here. In that instance, there's actually a disbelief in the gospel.
Right.
Because God has said you are clean, and they're saying, oh, that can't be. I'm too bad. And they actually have minimized God's grace. Like, God can forgive me, but I can't forgive myself is ridiculous. Because you're placing yourself as a higher authority than God. In the gospel, we're called to agree with God on what He says about our sin and our forgiveness. Our sin is bad, but His forgiveness extends to us and makes us clean. And we need to agree with God about that as a foundational piece. So there's a shame that is just self-loathing, beating yourself up for things that God has said you are free from. That's not what's being talked about here. There's a shame that comes from being sinful among the nations and shame of their wrong, which is not here either. He removes that public shame. And yet what this speaks of is a moral awareness, I think. It's like before God intervened in such this amazing way, they sinned in all these ways, but they didn't think of it as sin. They're just going along their way. They didn't feel any shame. They were unashamed of their sin, their idolatry, their rebellion, whatever it may be. But now that they have been cleansed, so God doesn't hold their sin against them anymore, now that they have a new spirit and a new heart, now that the Holy Spirit is within them, now they look back on their former life and recognize, and they feel shame for the things that they didn't feel shame for before. Not a shame that condemns, but a shame that leads to a greater appreciation of God's grace, a greater love for Him. And I think that's just part of spiritual maturity. So I think that should be true for us as well. I think of, in Paul's letters, he always goes back to sin.
Right.
You could say, oh, Paul, why can't you just be positive and focus on grace? Well, he does, but the way that we actually understand the extent of God's grace is by reflecting on the extent of our depravity.
Right.
So he reminds Christians of their sin so that they are reminded of God's grace. And actually, when we ignore, forget, downplay, minimize our sin, we are actually shortcutting and downplaying God's grace and therefore His glory. So there's a healthy way that looks back on our sin not beating ourselves up for it, but just going, oh man, but for the grace of God, look at where I was, look at where I would be, imagine what it would be like. Wow. So Paul himself would say, you know, I was the chief of sinners. Paul's not, oh, Paul, come on, cheer up, man. You're not that bad. It wasn't like he was like this, had this identity issue.
He's like fishing for like restoration.
Oh, guys, make me feel better. He's going, you know, I reflect on my heart and I was wicked, but I am what I am because of the grace of God. So it's a healthy way of reflecting on where I was, that comes out of a recognition of God's grace and leads to a greater worship of God.
Yeah, I think it's that sense of having proper biblical gospel-centered self-awareness.
Yeah.
Where we've, like, being aware of our journey in the sense of knowing where we've come from, knowing where we are, and looking at the cause and effect of going, mm-hmm. okay, by God's grace, yeah, like you said, I am where I am. And but, yeah, it's a sense of, without looking back, how can we know where we've been?
Yeah.
And the extent of God's work. But yeah, that's good. Second question, kind of moving in a different direction. Pretty common thing. All of us will probably at some point or another have dealt with this issue or had to respond in some way. But the idea of panhandling or begging. So you're driving somewhere and you have the guy sitting on the left turn signal divider with a sign expressing a desire for money, or a person down on their luck in the downtown core of Vancouver asking for help. Mm-hmm. The Bible's very clear that we're to care for the needy, that we're to care for the orphans and widows in their time of need, and not to reject people that are in need. You look at the Good Samaritan, like there's, if there's one thing the gospel especially are emphatically clear on is help those in need.
Yeah.
But those of us that have been around at all, any length of time, know there's also lots of people who like to take advantage of the generosity of strangers. And use generosity for negative expenditure. So, a guy asks you for money, he says he needs food, but,
what's he going to spend it on?
What's he going to spend it on? Is he, and if in certain areas of the world, generally a lot of people are on the street for a few reasons. Addiction's primary, mental health is another. Mm-hmm. So how do we respond gospel-centeredly to those equations? Is it a case-by-case scenario, or
it's complex, right? I mean, even in some parts of the world where you travel, there's kids begging on the street. You give the kid some money, he runs across the street, puts it in the car of the rich guy who basically employs these kids to look poor and approach Westerners.
Yeah.
So it's not helping the kid at all, right?
No.
You're showing he's employing their look to garner compassion. I mean, so the one verse that comes to mind, Matthew 5:42, Jesus says, give to the one who begs from you and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. So how do you do that? I mean, like, do you follow that in every instance?
Can I have 20 bucks?
See? I guess so.
Right. How do you handle that? Right?
And I've talked to Christians who say, it's not my place to judge how they use it. My role, it's not my role. My role is to be generous, and that's obedience to God, and they're accountable for how they use it. I'm not. That's one way. I that wouldn't be my way.
My way would be somewhere between that and the other, like generosity with discernment. Mm-hmm. That's generally how I've tried to respond. And I also don't think I've got it covered, but sorry, carry on. I interrupted you.
I think the heart of Jesus commands, like, I think we feel a tension because we know that this is being abused, or there's a risk of being abused, that the funds are going to be misused, the help that we offer is going to be misused, and yet we recognize there's this call to love and be generous and kind and compassionate. So I think there is a way in which we express love for our neighbor, love for others, and capture the heart of what Jesus is telling us to do. Show love, compassion to others. And yet be really discerning about how you help and where you give money. So here, let's do with the church. People walk into the church often, yep. not often, but on occasion, and
I would
look
say
for
on
money.
A somewhat regular basis.
Yeah. So here's some of our policies that Paul has developed. He should really be the one talking about this, but that Paul's developed for how we deal with it. We never hand out money to anyone. We used to give out gift cards for food, like to the Safeway, back in the Safeway, but then we stopped doing that too because Safeway sells all kinds of things that which would maybe not be healthy. Someone says they need groceries and then you give it to them, and we've heard way too many stories of what happened. Cigarettes, for instance, other things that can be used to spend money on. Some stores actually will give you, used to give cash.
And change.
Change, yeah.
So you buy a pack of gum and you get
yeah.
your...
So sometimes we give out gift cards. There's certain stores that only have groceries that we've done that. Sometimes we have, through the community, we refer to the Community Fund of Faith. The Community Fund of Faith will pay a bill of some once for someone who proves that they're in need. So the landlord, they can't afford the rent because of this situation, that situation. They meet with them. They determine, yes, this is a real need. They never give them money, but they'll pay the landlord directly for that month's rent or something like that. So they're helping them. But you never give cash to people is sort of the policy. Sometimes we worry if we're, say, downtown core, someone's looking for money, they have a sign, they're hungry. You want to help them get food because you want to show compassion. And sometimes people say, well, what you could do is you could take them and buy them food, maybe take them down to McDonald's and see, you know, if they want to do that. I remember Paul saying, someone told him this in all his work downtown Eastside, is that there's enough places that will give free meals to anyone in need that you could eat three meals a day downtown, three hot, good meals a day. Nobody is hungry downtown
because
there's not options. There's enough people doing good work, whether it's UGM or there's so many places that are offering food, offering shelter, offering
clothes,
those types of things.
Counseling off.
So that there are those things available constantly downtown. Now, I can't speak to, like, if you get approached at a truck stop.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the local resources are, but...
And those are often the hardest ones where you have... I've been approached in places where it's, hey, I need $4 to finish. I've been trying to get a bus ticket because... And, you know, you hear the sob story, and it puts you in that really challenging predicament of trying to discern on the spot, is this person credible or not?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, I mean, I always laugh because I probably get duped more than I don't. Like, I generally kind of go, you know what, I want to be able to help people in need, and sometimes I'd rather be wrong more than I'm ignorant or lacking compassion. So I'd rather be wrong more than I'm lacking compassion, in the sense of, like, and it's silly sometimes, but, like, there's one girl that in Bellingham that I've given money to a number of times. And finally, like, Ray and I were driving out of Fred Meyer. She hangs out on the corner of the Fred Meyer in Bellingham. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you think after 2 years of this girl sitting at this corner with the same sign, mm-hmm. people would start to realize maybe something's up. Either she doesn't need it or she's not motivated to pull herself out from whatever she's in. I think she was just talking to me to say, like, stop giving me money.
Yeah.
But it's tricky, right? Like,
yeah.
It's tricky trying to balance discernment and wisdom and well-versed knowledge of the resources that are available.
Yeah. And I think often we equate love of our neighbor with meeting the need that they state.
Right.
I need this. I need help with this.
I need an Xbox One.
And so out of compassion, we want to be compassionate, we want to be loving, we want to be generous, we want to give to those who beg from you and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. We want to be people that are holding our resources for kingdom purposes and being people of mercy. We want to be the good Samaritan that helps the man in need, and all our resources become there. But we have to actually, the trick and the challenge, which is very difficult, is determining differentiating what this person's asking for and what they need.
Right.
and what is the best way that I'm called to love this person? And loving this person may not be handing them cash. That actually may be the worst thing you could do for them. For some people. Depends on, I mean, a million different things. For some people, the worst thing you could do, they want money and you would give them money, and that would not be a loving thing to do, because that would only lead to further damage and a cycle of addiction that would hurt. So it's trying to discern, what is this person asking for and what do they really need, and what is the way I'm called to love them? And it's not simple. It's not always clear. We have to pray. We have to think. We have to discern. And yeah,
it's not black and white. And no. I mean, part of that is there's a number of instances, I can't think of the reference off the top of my head, but Jesus interacting with blind and heal me, and mm-hmm. he forgives their sins first.
Yeah.
And people say...
It's the root issue.
Right? So he would often get to the root issue with most people, whether he was approaching them or they were approaching him. You think of the woman mm-hmm. at the well, he approached her. Mm-hmm. But the example, like... It wasn't just like, Jesus wasn't naked without sandals standing on the side of the road, because anybody who asked him, he gave his cloak and tunic and sandals and he constantly healing every ailment of every person.
He left sometimes. Yeah.
So he was there to fill the felt need and not necessarily the articulated need.
Yeah.
And that's often hard to discern.
Yeah.
But I think having a posture of compassion with a mind of discernment is kind of the way to go.
Yeah. And we have to remember the difference between our day and Jesus' day. There's a lot of social services available to people.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean we don't show mercy. We do.
It doesn't mean that we... That's the thing.
And they aren't perfect social services. There's flaws in the system, to be sure. But I would rather recommend someone speak to someone who works in this field, right, then out of my ignorance helping their addiction
and in
or
the
their
same
challenge. I'd rather talk to those who know. And in our case, if you're in our church, Paul would be the best guy to talk to.
Yeah.
Rita Papworth, who works with the Community Fund of Faith, if it's in Delta, there's a need in Delta. And since we as a church recommend people to them all the time, because they work with all the churches and they work with all sorts of needs, so they have a database of information. They know who has legitimate needs, who's working the system. And sometimes it's people prey on the ignorance and play the system. And other times there's people with legitimate needs that just need a little help and they'll help recover. And we've seen those situations too, where people come in and we've been able to help them and really turn their lives around. Mm. And so you can't the answer's not always no. It's just the challenge of discernment. And I would trust those who are working in this field to have better skills, experience, discernment, to know these people, know where people are at, and to walk with them.
I think one of the balances, too, is that I don't know about most people, but I feel like this is my general response, is either compassion and kind of doing what the person wants, or dismissive.
Yeah.
So, you think about, like, how many times have you been downtown Vancouver and you've just seen somebody who looks desperate,
mm-hmm.
ignored,
mm-hmm.
constantly.
Yep.
That's the stuff that breaks my heart the most. It's like just seeing people ignored. But, so how do you balance giving them dignity, giving them response, but not necessarily just giving them what they want? And that's the balance really got to be careful.
See, what people actually often experience, that people ask for, is money or help with that type of thing. But what they usually actually need is something they maybe wouldn't even recognize, which is a community around them to walk with them. But you're traveling through a town at a truck stop and somebody wants cash, you can't be a community for them.
Yeah.
But what they need is a community of people that will walk with them. And not just hand them money and leave them alone, but we'll help them with all kinds of things in life. That's what God called us to, is community and a family that will support through the ups and downs, and not only meet this need, but there'll be other needs, and there's areas they need to grow and change. So what people need is a community, but what they're asking for is a quick handout, help. And I think that's actually where our social services let people down, is that they actually hand out food, clothing, that type of thing, but they don't actually provide a community that will walk with someone through the ups and downs of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Credit tools.
I don't know.
Well, we'll call that time for today. That was helpful. If you have questions, we'd love to have them. bside@tawasalliance.org. Woohoo! Got it right. Other than that, it's glad you're tuning in. Hope we see you in the pews on Sunday. But send those questions in and let us know how we can help meet a felt need in your life. Have a good week, and thanks for subscribing.
See ya.